This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, featuring 100% natural fiber clothing for women and men, real clothing for real people. Proud to sponsor the important voice of KABU. Gazelle is located at Northeast 41st and Fremont and can be reached at 503-288-3422. This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub, independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizzicato pizza, and all-new seating, located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland, 503-232-5511 or laurelhursttheater.com.
Well, good morning out there. My name is Ed Goldberg. I'm here with my friends and colleagues.
Don Taylor.
And?
DK Holm.
Doug, you have a little something you want to mention before we get rolling here.
Yes, we're initiating a new weekly or show contest, and we're going to give away a DVD with each episode of Movie Talk.
Oh,
and,
can I have it?
The first one that we're going to give away is The Interpreter.
Okay, never mind.
Yes, I figured you'd say that. I actually like aspects of the movie, and it's a pretty good disc.
Me too.
And thanks to Universal Studios and Special Ops Media, we have a DVD to give away. So what we're going to do is at about the 15-minute mark, or after a review of Good Night and Good Luck, we're going to invite people to call, and the first caller will win The Interpreter. And then we'll try it again on our next show. If we don't give it away this week, we'll try it again next week. But, yes, we're giving away a copy of The Interpreter with Nicole Kidman, the movie set in the UN. So
that's exciting.
We will announce it. We will tell you when to call. Don't call yet. And when you do call, you will be calling
503-231-8032.
So be prepared to call as soon as you hear the review of Good Night and Good Luck.
Okay, just quickly, one announcement. The Portland International Short Subject, the PISS Fest, the most unfortunate acronym, but there you go, starts October 21st and goes through the 22nd at the Hollywood Theater. The event hotline at the Hollywood Theater is 503-281-4215. I don't want to confuse people with too many numbers. Among the films are going to be The Death of Theodore Graham, Due Line, Extreme Shopping, and Falling Home. This is a really good local small film festival, and I encourage people to pay attention to it. Okay, we're going to start out with The Sublime, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, the latest Wallace and Gromit film. You want me to do the workup on this thing?
Go for
okay.
It.
Directed by Nick Park and Steve Box's friend at Aardman Studios. The voices of Peter Salas as Wallace, plus Ralph Fiennes, Helena Bonham Carter, and a bunch of other people. If you don't like Wallace and Gromit, you're either terminally serious or severely lacking in a love of the sublimely silly. I loved this movie. This movie was delightful from beginning to end. I've loved everything to come out of the Aardman Studios, especially stuff like The Wrong Trousers and Chicken Run. But if you are a fan of the Dottie Wallace and the sublime Gromit, this is, I think, the best film of the bunch. And they're able to stretch it out to about 71 minutes without any loss of humor or silliness or heart. These movies always have a lot of heart and soul to me. I don't give too many movies an A, but I'm giving this movie an A. If you're a kid, you should drag any adult you know to go see this film. I went with two other adults, including my wife Adele, and the three of us just laughed our butts off through the whole film. Dawn?
I agree completely. I've been a fan of the Wallace and Gromit shorts forever. I even have like a little coffee cup on my desk at work with them on the train with the penguin, you know, chasing
them. Have you seen this chicken?
and I went and I, you know, this is one of those films that I don't think I even, sometimes when you want a movie to be really good, you dread going because mm-hmm. you fear that they'll screw it up. And with this one, I had complete faith, after seeing like Chicken Run, for example, complete faith that he would be able to pull this off, and he does. I mean, the opening scene is a British bobby walking down a foggy street, just like the beginning of an old Hammer horror film.
Exactly, yeah.
And there are so many adult references in the film, but the movie is never too adult that kids can't enjoy it. Their comic timing is simply hilarious. Just some of the funniest things in the film are impossible to even describe because mm-hmm. they are simply the voiceless grommet doing something with such
with his face.
Impeccable timing
yes.
that you just die. And yes, again, adults loved this film. After I saw the film in a screening with a bunch of people, I walked out of the restroom and I saw a man walk out of the men's room with his little six-year-old, and the six-year-old was like humming the theme music. It's like it is a truly the perfect film for like people of all ages. It is hilarious, and yes, if you don't like Wallace and Gromit, there's just something wrong with you.
There's something wrong
and
with you.
I also give it an A and say just get out there, spend the money, and go see it.
Okay, for some cheese, Gromit.
Okay.
Gromit is definitely better than Scooby-Doo. That I do know.
Not even in the same continent. Okay, that was The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, the latest Wallace and Gromit film. The Corpse Bride. Dawn, do you want to do the workup on this?
Sure. It's the latest from Tim Burton. It's actually a stop-motion animation in the same fashion that A Nightmare Before Christmas was, with Johnny Depp as a young man whose family is pressuring him to marry this young woman who is voiced by Emily Watson,
correct.
I believe. And he's nervous and can't figure out how to do his vows, and so he goes stumbling through the scary, spooky woods at night, and while he's rehearsing his vows, he takes the ring and he sticks it on what he thinks is a branch, and it turns out to be the finger of a long-dead woman who was going to get married, but had been left at the altar, essentially, or actually left for dead in the woods, mm-hmm. and now he gets dragged into the land of the dead, and there's much singing of Danny Elfman songs, and it's gorgeous to look at. I'm a big Tim Burton fan. But my only problem with it is I just wanted more. Much in the same way as with his Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I walked out of it just wishing there had been a little bit more meat, more cleverness, that the songs had been a little bit better. It's beautiful to look at. It's beautifully done, but it's very short and only about 77 minutes. It's very short on plot. And I think it's just a matter of, you know, my sense out of it all was just a vague sense of disappointment after enjoying as much of it as I did, that of just wishing that it that you know, I just feel that Burton is maybe running out of steam, because you look at Nightmare Before Christmas, which was actually his vision, but it was also directed by Henry Selick,
mm-hmm.
and so this was directed by Burton, and you kind of wonder, you know, maybe he's gone to this well one too many times. You know, he did something brilliant like Big Fish,
mm-hmm.
and then now he comes back to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and it was kind of eh. And then he does Corpse Ride, which is gorgeous, but still not at the top of his game. And so the best I could do is I'd give it a B simply because it is gorgeous, but it was to me vaguely disappointing.
Well, I liked it, I think, a little more than you did, but all of your criticisms ring true to me. It's no secret or no surprise to me that, for example, he would find The Land of the Dead far more interesting
yes.
than The Land of the Living, because everything in The Land of the Dead is cool. They sing, they dance, they have a good time, whereas up in England, in Blighty, everybody's kind of grim and purposeful and has no sense of humor at all. The voice work is also excellent here. I mean, there's people like Tracy Ullman and Christopher Lee voicing characters here. And they're all
and again, Helena Bonham
wonderful.
Carter.
Helena Bonham Carter, who's Tim Burton's squeeze, I guess. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, I didn't think it was great, especially when you've seen Wallace and Gromit, but it's mm-hmm. not fair to the film to compare it to that. I give it a B+. I thought The Corpse Bride was amusing. I don't think there's any problem going to see this.
I think one of the problems, though, is I think people who loved, say, Nightmare Before Christmas
right.
are going to go see this. And even Danny Elfman's work is not at the top of the game because, you know, you can still remember songs from Nightmare Before Christmas and just sing them out loud. I can't remember a single snippet of music from Corpse Ride. And there were several mm-hmm. Elfman songs in
yeah.
the film. And I can't, as soon as I left the theater, they were just gone.
And I mean, there's somebody maybe who's gone too many times to the same well as Danny Elfman. Okay, that was The Corpse Bride. Dawn, tell us about... Oh, no, Doug, tell us about A League of Ordinary Gentlemen. This is a bowling film, is it not?
I sure will. It starts at the Hollywood. It ends on the 13th. And A League of Ordinary Gentlemen is a documentary from 2004 that chronicles the effort to revive the Professional Bowlers Association, the PBA, which was bought by two or three Microsoft millionaires. And then they hired a guy from Nike to whip the PBA into shape. And they brought back many of the famous bowlers from the 60s and 70s, some of whom are also the sons of famous bowlers from the 60s and 70s, to compete against each other, but with a thoroughly refashioned structure of, you know, going from city to city, you know, kind of NASCAR-ish. I thought the documentary was really fascinating because it is a glimpse into a world that is fast fading, the world of bowling at night. You know, there's a famous book of sociology called Bowling Alone, which charts our increasing isolation on the basis of the fact that nobody bowls anymore. People are, or if they do bowl, they bowl by themselves instead of with a league. The one problem for documentaries these days is reality television, and you always have to put quotes around reality when you say reality television, because there's some overlap here because they're following people around, but nothing is staged, everything is real, unlike shows like Survivor. And I just found it fascinating. It ends up being a competition between two specific bowlers, and one of them is the wild boy, the other one is, you know, the old stolid family man, and there is really some suspense as to which one is going to prevail, and you actually end up caring. I found it kind of fascinating. It's directed by two guys named Christopher Brown and Ken Seng. I thought it was pretty good. I give it a B+.
Oh, okay.
It's a League of Ordinary Gentlemen ends at the Hollywood on the 13th.
Yeah, I belonged to a league when I was in high school. How about that? Don, tell us about Elizabethtown. I'm kind of sorry I missed this because Kirsten Dunst is in it, right?
Yes, she is.
Uh-huh.
It's a from Cameron Crowe, who did many things, Say Anything, Almost Famous. And it's about a hot young shoe designer played by Orlando Bloom who works for a Nike-like conglomerate. In fact, we even get an establishing shot by a helicopter of Portland, of our big... whichever bridge that is, the big double archy one. I can never remember which bridge is which. I've lived here 12 years. I can never remember anything. But anyway, but we know who, what company this is supposed to be that he works for. And we learned at the very top of the film that his big shoe that he's been working on for 8 years is an unmitigated disaster. And in a week, it is going to come out, you know, in the business press that this company is going to lose $974 million because of his shoe. So, of course... so he's contemplating suicide, and he's in sort of this darkly funny sort of way. And one of the best moments in the film, actually, the segments, is when his boss, was this Phil Knightish character played by Alec Baldwin, takes him on a tour of the complex to point out all the people that are going to be fired and all of the different companies, including the natural resource department where they've been trying to save the endangered pandas, you know, and all of these programs are going to have to be shut down, these people fired, and Alec Baldwin sighs and says, "We could have saved the world." And he explains to him that, you know, $974 million, do you know how much money that is? You could round it up and get $1 billion. So Orlando Bloom is a little depressed, and so he's about to kill himself when he discovers his father has died unexpectedly of a heart attack back home in Kentucky. And his family lives here in Oregon, so his mother and his sister, played by Susan Sarandon and Judy Greer of Arrested Development, insist he go to Kentucky because he's the responsible one and he has to deal with everything. So basically, it's on the way there, he meets this perky, wacky, zany stewardess played by Kirsten Dunst, who lives in Kentucky, and her attentions and this sort of friendship would be romance kind of helps him through trying to plan the funeral in this community of zany, wacky, kind of down-home characters. And it's a film that is... in equal parts terrible and excellent. So it's very hard to dislike it.
A classic 2.5-star film, is that the...
It's hard to explain why that it's like one of these... The secondary characters are wonderful. Some of the dialogue is wonderful. Crow has grown a lot as a director. But at the same time, this movie has long stretches that go on way too long. The romance between Dunst and Bloom just isn't believable. She's grossly overacting because she's been obviously directed to be zany. So she's like, she's turning the charisma up to 11 and keeps just grinning like some kind of manic department store mannequin. And so there are huge flaws in this film. And yet I found myself strangely just won over by it because he gets such a great sense of place of this little town in Kentucky, and the characters that he meets and the family members he reconnects with, it's all that's all very well done. So the best I could do with this movie is give it a B-, and just say that, you know, despite cringing through some of its many huge and some of them very embarrassing flaws, it's still, there's a lot in it that's very funny, very heartwarming, and very done. And very well done. So
pizza rental?
It's a mixed bag. Yeah, maybe a pizza rental.
Okay. That was
Elizabethtown.
Okay. Doug, can you do Ganges River to Heaven?
Yes, I sure can. It's a 2003 documentary about burial practices in India. And I know that doesn't sound very, perhaps, very interesting, but it is a fascinating subject. I don't know if this movie does it very much justice, because it is so accepting of this practice, which, as you're watching the movie, at least from Western, I know we're not supposed to dislike other cultures. It's politically incorrect to judge from on high the things that people do in other cultures, you know, things like genital
mutilation,
yeah. Things like that. But I don't know, putting a corpse in the river that people bathe in every day strikes me as being slightly unsanitary. The movie does not attempt to judge one way or the other. It's, I guess, in that sense, an admirable bit of ethno anthropology as far as filmmaking goes. It's directed by a woman named Gail Ferraro, and it's well done and informative as far as a documentary goes. I just wish it had taken more of a stand. Parts of it are hard to take, because it goes right into a hospice where people go to die, and it charts their gradual death over the course of 2, 5, 7 days leading up to the time when they're carried through the city and put in the river. So, it's both fascinating and repulsive, and yet at the same time, kind of disappointingly, not taking a stand. Anyway, it's Ganges River to Heaven. I give it a C+, and it's playing at the Hollywood through the 16th.
Okay.
You know that's why the Willamette is as polluted as it is.
Because of all our death.
Well,
burial
what do you think OHSU does with all this?
The Ganges runs into it. Okay. Before we go on, it's almost 18 minutes after 9. The first caller at 503-231-8032 gets an unopened DVD of The Interpreter. Okay.
Starring Nicole Kidman and Sean Penn.
Sean Penn, that's right. And neither of them up to their usual standards, unfortunately. But that's okay.
But it's free. If you win it.
That's right.
That's
it's
right.
Free. That's right. Okay, I'm the only one who saw Goodnight and Good Luck. Okay. This is the title of the film was the sign-off of the sainted Edward R. Murrow, the patron saint of CBS News, and thereby of all newsmen, since CBS News was the prize horse of that era. It's directed by George Clooney. Clooney also plays a role in the film, along with David Strathairn, Patricia Clarkson, Robert Downey Jr., a really terrific cast of young and better-known character actors, and Joe McCarthy himself playing Joe McCarthy as only he could do. And the major subtext to this film is, if you think things are bad now, this is the way it was then. It's a terrific, powerful movie. Ed Murrow had to take on his own network. We have a winner. Thank you. No more calls. He takes on his own network to confront Joe McCarthy. Joe McCarthy was running wild in those days, destroying lives, making reckless charges. He was a vile, vicious, awful man, the kind of man that gives Karl Rove tumescence whenever he thinks about it. He was the beast from the pit.
Tastefully said.
Thank you. Thank you. This was the beginning of the demagogue's downfall. When Ed Murrow took him on, it began to put cracks in the power of Joe McCarthy. And it's a call to the modern press to do their damn jobs. I mean, this is what they're supposed to be doing, is going after people like this. It's the advocate, there's an antipathy between the press and the government that should never be ameliorated at all. This is great acting, totally gripping film, and uplifting. Thank you, George Clooney, for this movie. I gave it an A. Everybody should see this film. They should drag everybody they know to see this film.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it, because I think George Clooney is a really good director.
Oh, yeah.
His previous film was fantastic.
Yes, absolutely.
But this movie, I mean, this movie has, to me, resonates with me, because this is a subject I've been studying for years, so it's a great film. Okay, derailroaded. You want me to do the rundown on this?
Yes.
Okay, this is directed by a guy named Josh Rubin. It's a documentary about Larry Wildman Fisher, the Bob Dylan of the outsider music world. I don't know if anybody knows about what outsider music is. It's music made by people who very often do not have...
talent?
I disagree. It's just that their standards and how they look at the world is different. These are people who are challenged. I have to say it. Very often they're mentally ill. And because of that, they look at the world in ways that we don't. And very often they produce music of surprising beauty. And Larry Wildman Fisher was a character hanging out on Sunset Strip, selling songs which he made up on the spot for a dime a pop. He had a very, very troubled life. He's resisted taking medication. He's been institutionalized and given shock treatments. I had his first album. There's been a couple more that I didn't even know about until I saw this film. It's not for everybody, but for anybody who's interested, he understands what makes a rock and roll song better than the hit factories that turn out the corporate rock that we're listening to now. This is a really lovingly done film by people who appreciate him and appreciate his gifts. Music freaks should be assured that he's treated fairly in this film, but also there's a price. He drives away almost everybody who loves him, and his own creative force makes him pay a great price. I gave the movie a B+. I think it's a very interesting film.
You know, Frank Zappa was the person who discovered him and recorded the first record with him. And I always worried back when I was listening to the Wild Man Fisher on a competing FM radio station back in the 70s, that Frank Zappa was exploiting him in some strange way. That doesn't appear to be the case from this movie. But I will say that this movie, I don't really like Wild Man Fisher that much. And the movie didn't make me like him any better, but it didn't make me understand him in the context. And the movie has some fascinating moments. For example, if you know anything about Wild Man Fisher, it may come as a complete and total surprise to you that he records a duet with Rosemary Clooney.
That was great.
They show you them filming this. They have film of them recording this. And also, Billy Mummy, the character from Lost in Space, ended up somehow, I don't know what circuitous route his career took, but he ended up doing sort of comedy music stroke videos and ended up at Rhino Records helping Wild Man Fisher record more records. And
he was half of the
Barnes and Barnes.
Barnes and Barnes.
And he appears through the movie halfway through it. Only then do you realize, oh, that's Billy Mike, because he kept calling him Barnes and Barnes instead of their real names. Anyway, it's fascinating, even though I personally didn't find myself won over or wooed by the Wild Man Fisher shtick. But it's a really good documentary. Mm-hmm. I give it a B+.
Yeah. You have to remember that he was an unmedicated, paranoid, schizophrenic, bipolar person. And the fact that he loved and hated people and thought that people were after him was strictly a function of his condition. It's a terrific movie. He's being taken care of now. Larry is. Okay. Jesus, 9 songs.
You said you were going to try and catch that.
I actually saw this. This is you want me to do the
sure.
Okay. This is directed by Michael Winterbottom, who you have to wonder about sometimes. And the two people that you really care about, if you care about anything, are Kieran O'Brien and Margot Stille. They play a couple. And the only thing I think is it was great to be young and horny. I remember those days with great fondness. This is the Playboy Channel meets MTV. It's a young couple, gets it on, and goes to hear rock and roll bands. But they're really, really hip rock and roll bands, like the Von Vondies and the Black Rebel Motorcycle Club and the Super Furry Animals.
And
the Dandy Warhols. And in between, they're screwing each other's eyebrows off.
Yeah.
And the sex is quite explicit. You actually get to see organs and stuff like that. And the thing is, when it goes into they try to create a story. He's an ice researcher in Antarctica. I'm never quite clear what she did.
A
writer or an editor or something. The story is banal and insipid in the extreme, and they're either screwing or you get to listen to these bands. Well, that's not much of a movie, you know? I mean, the story is non-existent, and all the music, I hate to say this, I know I'm going to get in trouble for this, but everything is refried Velvet Underground, and they go to sue. I think the value, you know, Lou Reed ought to sue. And I'm saying, what was the point of this movie exactly? I gave it a C.
Yeah, it's essentially, if not, I like Michael Winterbottom sometimes. I enjoyed 24-Hour Party People quite a bit.
That was a good movie.
Code 46, a little bit weird, but, you know, what the heck. But, yeah, it's a movie about people going to concerts, and when they're not going to concerts, they're either standing around their kitchen having these tedious conversations you don't care about, or they're having extremely explicit sex. And I think that the point of the movie, if there is a point, was that gradually they told the story of their relationship through the increasingly graphic sex, I guess. I don't know. It just struck me as very pretentious. And, I mean, the reason to see it, the one thing that makes it stand out is the fact that the actors are actually having sex.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, you know, shouldn't we be beyond, like, being shocked or titillated by that? I mean, I applaud it. I find it refreshing. Okay, great. People that, you know, you're having a sex scene, they're actually having sex. I also applaud the fact that for the first half of the movie, most of the scenes of sex involved him pleasuring her.
Yes,
which
that's
is
true.
Very rare.
But it all came down to the other stuff at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Which is probably says something about their relationship.
It
I don't
something
know.
Something about the state of erotic movie making.
Yeah. The problem is that this could have all been something, but what it is really is just very tedious.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of pretentious and tedious, and so it's just very arty porn. Because you don't care about these characters, and you don't care really. For me, it's the same problem that I have watching most pornography. If I don't care about the people or the situation or their relationship, I don't really care about watching their organs slap into each other. I could be watching, like, a medical show on the Discovery Channel.
It's bumping uglies, basically.
So, yeah. So, basically, you know, I'd give it, like, a C-. I was extremely underwhelmed by it.
Okay, we only have a few minutes left. Let me go through Separate Lies quickly. Directed by Julian Fellowes with the incredibly good Tom Wilkinson, Emily Watson, and Rupert Everett. This is adultery and stiff upper lips among the privileged in England. Everyone is so civilized about their passions, or like Rupert Everett, just blasé about them. The whole thing is very, very well acted and extremely dull. The one human act in the film where a husband gets angry at the lover of his wife stands out and puts the rest of the film just in perspective as being terribly, terribly stiff upper lip, don't you know? Oh, yes, you're screwing my wife, I see. I have to take the 4:15 to London. One tries to care, but one does not. I gave it a B-. Can you do In Her Shoes really quickly?
In Her Shoes looks like a chick flick, has a terrible ad campaign, makes it look like a wacky Cameron Diaz comedy. But keep in mind, it is directed by Curtis Hanson, who gave us L.A. Confidential and 8 Mile. And it is a much smarter, much wittier, much more complex, much more interesting film than you would be led to believe from the ad campaign, with Toni Collette, Shirley MacLaine actually playing a real character rather than chewing scenery. Very adult film, very smart. Just because it happens to star, be all about women, does not mean it should be marketed as a fluffy chick flick. I would recommend this to anyone, male, female. It's actually a far, far better movie you'd be led to believe in the ad campaign. I'd give it an A, and I also give a few movies an A, and I liked this movie very, very much.
Very surprising. Mm. Doug, quickly tell us about Into the Blue.
Into the Blue is a movie that you will probably want to prefer to see at a drive-in. It is really kind of non-consequential. It's a remake of The Deep. Do you remember that with Nick Nolte? It's just a straight remake. They don't even. This is ridiculous. Anyway, but it does have this actor named Paul Walker, who I am becoming more and more fond of. I think he's really, really good. Probably the most underrated actor in the. He was also in The Fast and the Furious. Anyway, I don't think it's really worth seeing unless you're a skin diving fan. But I do recommend it to students of screen acting to just watch and see what Paul Walker does. And I think, you know, people might be impressed with that. If you can see past, you know, the exploitation movie thing. I give it, as a movie, I give it a C or a C plus, but as an acting vehicle, I give it an A.
Okay.
You have a bit of a man crush on him.
Yeah.
Two for the money. Let me do this really quickly. Al Pacino, Matthew McConaughey, Rene Russo. I don't care anything about the world of sports betting, but McConaughey's very, very good, better than he's been in a long time. Rene Russo's excellent. And Pacino chews up the scenery again, but it's really great to watch him. He does it with real passion. Nobody acts with passion like this guy. He makes the movie really a lot of fun. Not an A-list movie, which is high on your B-list. Okay, go see The Course of the Were-Rabbit. Corpse Bride is pretty good. League of Ordinary Gentlemen, Doug Light. Elizabethtown is okay.
It's okay.
Ganges River, Anthropology 101. Good night and good luck. See it, see it, see it. Derailroaded, good documentary. 9 songs, Separate Lies, forget it. In Her Shoes, very good.
Very good.
2 for the money, so-so, and Into the Blue. For acting fans only. And the DVD of The Interpreter goes out to, I don't know who, I'm afraid.
Oh, an anonymous listener.
Next week?
We're going to do Rumblefish. For the next show, we will be giving away a DVD of Rumblefish.
Okay, thank you all out there very much.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Conference on Human Rights and Labor Rights, featuring speakers Scott Nova, Executive Director of Workers' Rights Consortium from Washington, D.C., and Leona Foxvog of Sweat Free Communities from Massachusetts. This event is presented by the PSC Progressive Student Union and the Coalition of Campus and Community Groups. And it takes place on Monday, October 17th at 7 p.m. at the PSU Multicultural Center. For more information, please email lc@pdx.edu or call 503-471-7798.